Hello and welcome to the front page, the Racing Post show, looking at all the hot news from the horse racing world. And what a special week we have for you. It is Grand National Week, the world's most famous steeplechase. We'll be discussing it in detail as well as looking at the start of the flat season. My name is James Stevens, your host, Racing Post journalist and West Country correspondent. And we've got a regional theme in the studio today because I'm joined for a discussion ahead of Aintree by our Lambourne correspondent, Liam Head. Liam, how are we doing? And it's a great week, isn't it?
It is, you know, and it comes so soon after the Cheltenham Festival as well, which is great for racing fans. We're going to see some top-class action across the 3 days at Aintree. So, you know, it's an exciting week for everyone involved.
It certainly is. Let's get stuck straight into the Grand National. We're discussing on Monday afternoon. We're waiting for the final field to come through, I'm sure, as everyone is. But as of now, Liam, it looks set to be an interesting race. Last week on the show, if you've not seen it, do catch up. There's discussion about the race, how it's changed complexion. We're going to focus on the actual race itself. How do you sort of assess the race, and really, what do you think is going to win?
Yeah, I think the horse that I've been keen on it is Vanilia. Obviously, I think in this race, you know, it's such a daunting race for everyone involved, but course experience is such a big thing, and the fact that Vanilia's been around this course twice. Obviously, he was second in the race to Corrick Ramble a couple of years ago, and he's running off the same weight as well. So I think he's got a great chance for Gavin Cromwell, who's obviously sort of less strong with an. I know the way you're thinking, obviously not going there, but it's an exciting race. There are so many chances, and it's, you know, it's the race that stops the nation for us in Britain.
It is, and let's explore a few themes of the race. You touched on Gavin Cromwell. We know he won the Gold Cup earlier this season. Just an extraordinary rise in such a small time, you know. I remember even at the start of last season, he was saying he was coming over to Cheltenham to sort of have runners away from Willie Mullins and just find opportunities. And a year and a half later, he's won the Gold Cup and he's got the favourite in the Grand National in Stumptown. Quite an extraordinary story, Stumptown, as well, the way he's progressed through the ranks. And do you see him going off the favourite?
I certainly can be, just given how well Gavin Cromwell's done this year, and like you said, since he's sort of joined the training ranks, it's a phenomenal rise, and it's always a theme with Gavin Cromwell. He doesn't really just have runners to make up the numbers. He goes with genuine chances wherever he goes in the major festivals, and we've seen that at Cheltenham. You know, we've seen it at Aintree before, and I think he's got a really strong team going into Saturday.
Okay, let's talk more regional now. You're Lambourne, I'm West Country. We've got 2 20-to-1 shots. Highland, who looks likely to get in, we think.
Yeah.
Can do kid for Paul Nicholls, winner of the Coral Gold Cup. Would you be confident on a match bet between those two?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I've been really impressed with Highland. And what strikes me is how well he comes out of his races and how well he sort of comes on to the next. He's obviously been, you know, a phenomenal performer for Nicky Henderson this season. He's won at Cheltenham twice, and he obviously finished behind the Jukebox Man at Kempton. Obviously, unfortunately, we've not been able to see the Jukebox Man since. But, you know, it's Nicky Henderson, this is the race that's missing from his mantelpiece. Mm. So he's obviously desperate to win it. And I think Highland is as good as a chance he's had in the race for a long time.
I'd agree with you about that. It's quite an extraordinary stat. He's never won any type of national. Welsh National, Scottish National, West Wales National. He's won the American one, but even that was over hurdles. Is it sort of a itch he's down to? I mean, you know Nicky Henson and that yard well. Is it something they're quite aware of? It? We need to get one of these in the bag, or is it just a case of, well, we like winning champion hurdles and we like having quick horses?
Yeah, well, I mean, the champion hurdles are obviously great, and the champion chases and whatnot, but, you know, the Grand National is the one that everyone wants to win, and Nicky Henderson is fully aware that he's not won that, and he'll be determined as ever, you know, to get that, because, you know, he's got the firepower that he's had in the yard for a number of years, but he's not had that elusive national win. So the Highland has got a great chance this year, certainly.
There's business to be done for Mr. Henderson before then. We know how much he likes Friday, anyone who's seen the quite bizarre Nick Luck clip. But talk us through what is going to be a huge 2 days. A bit of redemption needed for Constitution Hill first on Thursday in the Aintree hurdle. And then, of course, John Bonn after his muddling run. Let's start with John Bonn in the Melling Chase. What was your assessment of that run at Cheltenham? Because for all he's clearly a top-class horse, is it just a case of Cheltenham just isn't his game?
The more you think about it, yes. But he obviously has won at Cheltenham before, and listen, there was a lot of talk beforehand, before the race at the festival, that he doesn't go at Cheltenham, he can't perform, but he's won there before. Listen, he made a slight error at one of the fences there around the track, but he did tremendously well to sort of get back up and finish the way he did. You know, if it wasn't for that mistake, then he would have been right up there at the end. So I'd, in terms of the two between him and Constitution Hill, I'd say he's got less to sort of show than Constitution Hill, because he obviously stayed up on his feet.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's still got a lot to do, because he's obviously coming back off what would be a slightly disappointing run for Connections, probably, Phil. But at the same time, he won this race last year and he's never lost at Aintree. So his record in the race speaks for itself and at the track. So he is the one that they do have to beat on this week.
Yep. Constitution Hill, we such a disappointing not to see him finish the race in the Champion Hurdle. It was such a disappointment on the day, wasn't it? A lot of people excited to see, and that great story about the Champion Hurdle. First things first, how's he been since that fall? What's the vibe from the yard? And are we going to see him on Thursday? Is that the plan?
The plan is Thursday, yeah. You know, all been well. They've all been very happy with him, and he's come out of the festival really, really well. And as Nicky Henderson's alluded to a couple of times, he didn't really have a race. You know, he obviously came down at the fifth hurdle, I think it was, and he got back up Constitution Hill and carried on. But he obviously didn't have that hard of things, you know, at Cheltenham. And obviously, there's a lot to sort of prove, I'd say. You know, there's a lot to do for them. I know that they've been doing a bit of loose schooling with Marcus Foley, which is something that Henderson's done before, to sort of get that love back for the hurdles. You know, we obviously seen that slight mishap at Cheltenham on Trials Day where he almost blundered at the last, and it was obviously massively disappointing. And certainly, I mean, we were there on Tuesday on Champion Hurdle Day, and you could really feel the energy that was sucked out of the place when Constitution Hill went down. It almost felt like the race was done and dusted, kind of. But and obviously with the drama that happened with Stateman as well. But it was great to see Golden Ace win the race. But for Constitution Hill and Henderson's camp, that they'll be desperate to get there on Thursday and show everyone that he is one of the best around.
Yeah, completely agree with you. How that mood changed at Cheltenham after Kopech the Bald won, and just the whole place was erupting. The sort of everyone was on this big treble, and then Mashburn went down and Constitution Hill. Everyone wanted to see Constitution Hill just for a bit of a pick-up more than anything. And for the ones who'd backed Lossiemouth, of course, and thought, well, one win, the other one will win. But hopefully he runs well at Aintree, and hopefully he gets back to winning ways, because he has got an appeal like very few others in jumps. I mean, Gallop and the Champ quite obviously, but he has a draw more in, and I'm sure the Aintree crowd would really love to see him win, because it's a fantastic Thursday, isn't it? And if he could win on a really good day's racing, it would top it off.
Yeah, and I think as well, there's obviously talk about Lossiemouth and Brighter Days Ahead going there as well. Yep. So if he can do what we all know he's capable of and beat horses of that calibre, obviously he's beaten Lossiemouth at Kempton over Christmas. If he can do that and perform to anywhere near what we've seen him do many a time and win, and then it obviously builds excitement to maybe even going over to Punchestown as well, which would be incredible for everyone involved.
I'm going to throw one more question at you about Constitution Hill. The trip, is it a question mark to you, especially against Lossiemouth?
No, I think he's proven that he can go any trip, any pace. I think the only question mark that we do have is the jumping, and obviously that is the name of the game with this sport, and certainly you know what we're going to see. But if he can get back to the way, obviously he jumps so fluently in his jumps, but I think if we get to see him back to his best and, you know, really going over those hills at full speed, then he's the one that they all have to chase.
Yeah. What else has caught your eye at Aintree?
I think just going back to the National, obviously it's so refreshing to see a lot of British trained horses in with a chance. Obviously the race has been dominated by the Irish in the last few years. I mean, obviously Lucinda Russell's won the race a couple of times, and you know, it's great to see the home team really have a strong team. Obviously Iroko got a brilliant track record there at the race. He was third in 2023 in a grade one over hurdles, and second over fences last year. I know the way you're thinking, and we know what he's gone on to do.
Form looks good now, doesn't it?
It does. And I believe this has been the plan for a while for Connections as well. Obviously, he's a JP McManus horse, which adds a bit of flavour to it. He's just one who loves this race more than anyone. So it'd be really interesting to see how he goes. Obviously, the Nigel Twiston Davis has got a good couple of chances in Beauport and Broadway Boy, and as you well aware, Paul Nicholls.
Yeah.
You know, he's sending his strongest team to the national for a long time.
Five runners is a big
and
team.
They all seem to be really well in themselves. I spoke to him yesterday at Ascot, and he was really happy with them all. They all worked Saturday, did the final piece of work. So it's exciting, you know, if the home team can bring it to Ireland, then we're in for a really special race.
Yeah, I love Aintree. I think it's fantastic 3 days. And one of the angles I think is most interesting about it is that gap between Cheltenham and Aintree, which always changes. It's quite tight this year. And I think one of the horses that's going to be interesting from a perspective of how they're going to deal with that gap is the Lamba.
Yeah.
Who ran, of course, on the final day of Cheltenham
in
the Triumph Hurdle Run. Brilliant race, and will be in one of the early races on Thursday. So we're going to get a test of, well, not just what the Cheltenham form's like, but how much of a gap there is and what horses are going to feel it. We don't know, because, of course, it's been a bit of a growing trend for good horses to avoid Cheltenham and focus on Aintree, with perhaps Grey Dawning this season being the flag bearer. And if he were to win, that's a huge step for Dan Skelton towards that trainer's title as well, which is all but sealed, bar the Grand National to come.
Yeah, and don't forget Hewick. Obviously, didn't go to the festival. And, I mean, what a story it would be for Hewick again. You know, we've mentioned him many a times how cheap the horse has cost and what he's won. It's great to see Gavin Sheehan back on board. Obviously, won at Kempton a few years ago. But, yeah, like I said, it's that gap is very close. You know, if these horses have had a hard race, you are putting them up to get to Aintree. We've seen Dan Skelton, obviously, you mentioned Grey Dawning was tipped for the Gold Cup earlier in the season, but the plan was set out early to miss Cheltenham in favour of coming to Aintree. So, you go back to Lulamba, like you said, he did everything right on the day, Lulamba. He obviously beat what we thought was his biggest rival in East India Dock, and he travelled and jumped really strongly. Obviously, getting pipped on the line by 100-1 shot wasn't on the bingo card, but it was. I thought he'd come on for an awful lot, and he's got a really exciting future for Nicky Henderson. I think if Nicky Henderson didn't think that the gap between the two races was doable, he wouldn't be entering in for Aintree. So it's exciting to see what happens. Obviously, that gap is quite tight, so only time will tell, but it's obviously exciting because we're still sort of coming out of the Cheltenham fever, enjoying what we're seeing, and bam, we're straight into Aintree. So for racing fans, it's fantastic.
Yeah, and then it's on to Punchestown, isn't it? And also the Irish Grand National. There's a lot happening in a short space of time. Even Sandown at the end of the season is pretty good. Final question on Aintree. Give us one winner.
One winner. I mean, I'd love to say Constitution Hill. Django Bay, I think. It's interesting because he obviously won. He finished like a train. He came out of the clouds in the Arkle over a trip that we thought was way too short for what he needed. Nicky Henderson said that that trip would be the last time we see him over that distance. He's entered in both the 3 mile and the 2 mile four. I think it looks like he's going to go for the 2 mile four, and I think he's just absolutely. He's come out of Cheltenham, bouncing. And I think he'll be really hard to stop again winning.
Well, I think Handstands is going to win that race. So that was my selection. So we're taking each other on in the manifesto. It's the very first race of a meeting.
Well, and they've obviously met before. And Handstands has got one up on him on treacherous ground for Django Bay, should I add. But it's exciting, 3 days. It's so compelling for everyone involved, Obviously, Cheltenham's 4 days. There's a lot more racing.
Let's not get into that.
Well, no, I'm not going to go down that route. But it's exciting. 3 days, the top class racing. There's, countless amounts of grade ones. And, of course, the Grand National. So what's not to like?
No, exactly. Loads of content throughout the week on Racing Post YouTube channels and throughout the website and such. So don't go anywhere. And, of course, the postcards, which I host. And, of course, I'm going to say, promote is 7 o'clock on Thursday. So do not miss that for all those Grand National tips. Let's look back now. The flat season started at Doncaster. You're a bit of a flat fan. Jumps, where do you see? In the middle? Or? Preference?
I'm going to sit on the fence for that one.
Okay.
But it does seem strange. 1 minute we're talking about the Grand National, and now we're going back to the flat. But like you said, the flat started, and it started with a bang on Saturday. Kempton, Doncaster, and obviously in Ireland as well, there were some really impressive performances. I think the one to take out from all of that, and obviously I'm siding with my patch here, Dancing Gemini for Roger Teal in the listed Doncaster Mile. What a performance, you know, from that horse. Obviously, he didn't win as a three-year-old, but he came close to on a couple of times. Obviously, he finished second in the French Guineas on really soft ground, and was thrown into the deep end, really, in very top races. Finished behind City of Troy in a number of times, and then ran really well to finish fourth at Ascot on Champions Day. So Roger Teal's done a fantastic job to get him back to this level. Obviously, I spoke to him back in January, and he said that the listed Doncaster race was the target, and then the lockings at Newbury. So he's obviously Group 1 ability. So it's exciting certainly for the yard. Obviously, Roger Teal, he's the first to say that last season didn't really go to plan for him. But this season he started like a house on fire. I think he's had 7 winners so far this year, and he's really got a flag bearer for the yard. And it's great to see, because you have to go back a few years to see Oxted for the yard, and it's great to see that Dancing Gemini can hopefully carry the team forward.
Yeah, I think 3 things I thought about Dancing Gemini. Number one, that race was won by Charin last season. Yeah. So the signs are that that's a good race and whatnot. I felt it was very unlucky last season. Just things didn't happen. Ground went against them at key times and such. And also, as you mentioned, Roger Teal, a lot of those horses improve with age. And I do just wonder if this is going to be a horse who was always going to be more of a 4-year-old than he was a 3-year-old. So maybe it's his year. Maybe it could be. And the Lockinge is, well, it's certainly going to be winnable. He's going to be short enough. We also had the Lincoln won by Godwinson for William Haggis. Good news for him after he didn't get to run Dubai Honour in Australia, meeting called off after a bit of rain. That's going to be on Tuesday, so he may have won it by the time you're watching this. But a good start for him and Kieran Fallon. Obviously, big connections when they take out a big handicap. It's always a bit of a confidence boost, isn't it, with Cravens and Greenhams and Guineas, etc., all round the corner.
Yeah, and I think certainly to get off the mark in such a prestigious race like the Lincoln, and so early on in the season as well, it kind of sort of lets you just breathe a little bit better. Yeah. You know, to sort of get up and running. And let's just first and foremost say what a wonderful ride it was by Kieran Fallon. You know, to see where he was halfway in the race to how he finished, to find that gap. You do have to feel for the connections of the second of George Bowie's horse. I mean, they were celebrating like they'd scored a last-minute winner at Wembley. In the parade ring, commiserations for them. But they've got an exciting horse to go forward for this season. But yeah, it was great for William Haggis and everyone involved that they can get on the board so early in the season.
Yeah, it was. You mentioned at the top, we've been watching a lot of jump racing, suddenly attention turns to the flat. It was like thrown in the deep end, wasn't it? Baptism of Fire with all these fast finishes and horses coming from all the air and draws and stuff like that to factor into the punting equation. So it certainly felt like we were back in flat mode, albeit for just a short bit of time, and now we're on 34 and is in a handicap chase on the weekend. Other key details I got was, well, the first 2-year-old race in Britain is the Brocklesby. Ammo Racing won with Norman's K. Now, I thought that was a good, important win for them and for Richard Hannon. As you mentioned, sort of that relief of getting a good winner. When you get a 2-year-old winner, then you know the standards there, don't you? Sort of get a grasp of what you got. So for Richard Hannon, then that'll be huge. And it's a huge year for them, having bought Freemason Lodge, Sir Michael Stout's old yard. That's a sign of what they want to achieve and how big they want to be. Taking out an early race just helps settle those nerves a bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a statement of intent, really, to show others that they're there and they're going to be competing at the very top. You know, we've seen them come in, you know, and they've obviously spent a lot of money. You can't hide away the fact that, but they're certainly here for the long run, and they've obviously invested quite a lot, and like you said, they've got the facilities now to handle everything. So they've got a really promising year again.
Let's turn our attention to Ireland. Bit of a mixed week for Aidan O'Brien last week, because we found out that Lion in Winter is unlikely to make the 2000 Guineas, of course, favourite having been brilliant last season. But as you'll see on the front page of Racing Post today, Delacroix, very impressive winner in the Bally Sacks, a race which Aidan O'Brien has won with High Chaparral, Galileo, before going on to the Derby. Did we see a Derby winner yesterday? On Sunday, should I say?
We've seen a Derby contender. I mean, it was very impressive. Mm. I think you mentioned High Chaparral. I think that was the last time that Ballydoyle have produced a Bally Sacks winner to go on then and score in the Derby. But Aidan O'Brien has a thing of just unearthing these gems, you know, and even if one of his star players is out of, for whatever reason, he does always find a suitable candidate to replace anyone. And it was an impressive, visually impressive, and you'd obviously like to think there's a lot more to come from Delacroix.
Yeah, I just wonder if he's an Epsom horse. You just always have a bit of a doubt. Yeah, the way he sort of moves around the race, he's a bit of a big boy. I just have my doubts, and I'd like to see him trialled at somewhere like a Chester, just to see how he, or a Lingfield maybe, just see how he got round, because that Epsom test is completely different, and he's clearly got class, he's clearly got ability, but you have to have doubts, and perhaps 10-1 just suggests that I'm not the only one perhaps thinking that bit of doubt, do we think?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, like you said, it's such a big track to try and do it on at Epsom. And, you know, you need as much experience as possible, you know, before that race.
Yeah.
So it will be important to see what Aidan O'Brien does between now and then. Obviously, there's a few trials that we might see that might sort of answer a few unanswered questions that we have. But Aidan O'Brien is the man for all year round, isn't he? And we just know he's got the power in his squad to have these classic contenders.
Yeah, I mentioned a match race, Lambourne on the West Country, in the Grand National. I'm less confident on the flat, so I'll let you win. Who knows what Rob Millman and the like have got. I'm sure they're going to have a good season, but you may have a few more classic contenders than we do. What's drawn your eye locally? Any whispers about horses that we should be keeping an eye out for?
I think I had sat down with Ed Walker last week and we spoke about Almacam, and he really is... one horse that Ed Walker quoted and said that he's not as excited as a horse to see this horse out as he has done for a while. So that's exciting, and he's obviously building a really powerful team there at Kingsdown. He's up on numbers, and he's delivered a Group One last year in France with Makarova. So he's really sort of punching above. Above some of the others around, and he's obviously a big trainer. He's been there, done it. And Almacam would be interesting. I think the Tats Gold Cup, the Group One, the Curragh. I think that's one of his possible targets at the minute. But he's obviously Group One ability, so it'd be exciting to see him at the top level.
And classic contenders.
Classic contenders. It's difficult. It's still early days. Obviously, we've got the Dubai Duty Free Spring Trials at Newbury in a couple of weeks. They'll sort of hopefully steer us a bit more in the right direction. Ed Walker again has got Noble Champion in the 2000 Guineas, so it'd be interesting to see if, I think it's the Fred Darling is usually one of the main sort of talking points before the Classic. So and as well for Newbury as well, there's that extra week between the Newbury races and the Classic. So hopefully we'll see some big names turn up there in 2 weeks.
It could be stronger than usual, which is interesting given Frankel, Kingman and the like have won that race in the past. We're going to have a look at ITV Racing after this short break. So, final story we're going to be looking at this week is again a bit Aintree related. An interview this week with Sam Queck, who will be appearing on ITV Racing. Caused quite a lot of comment about what the ITV Racing picture should be look like. She'll be appearing among the usual faces on ITV at Aintree across this weekend. But of course, it raised comment across the board as to what ITV Racing should look like, how the broadcaster for horse racing on terrestrial TV should be, what sort of content they should be displaying, how they should be showing racing, and of course, what really they should be perceiving to a wider audience. Liam, it's fair to say there was a lot of disagreement about whether racing should be having hardened racing purists presenting the show, whether they should be looking to widen their appeal. And Lee Motz had wrote a fantastic column, Lee, usually in the show, saying that actually the Grand National's bigger than racing. You know, that the Grand National has such a wider appeal that you need other faces to pull people in and to get them involved in this. It's a shop window almost. Do we think this is the right person? Is Sam the right person? Is that the right way that ITV should be going about showing the sport to a wider audience?
Yeah, I think we've touched on this before, and we've had conversations with Ed Chamberlain in the past. He's obviously been to the Racing Post studios before. With ITV Racing, their job is to attract viewers, you know, racing fans and non-racing fans. Saturday, the Grand National, and leading up to it, Thursday and Friday, there'll be many people watching ITV Racing having never watched horse racing before. So essentially, that is their way to promote the sport in the best ways possible. Now, obviously, they do a tremendous job with the likes of AP McCoy, Ruby Walsh, Mick Fitzgerald. You know, they've got all tremendous knowledge of the sport. They've been in the sport. But it's so important to sort of fill non-racing fans with a bit of confidence, the fact that they know who's on the screen.
Yeah.
You know, for example, Sam Queck, she's obviously been on other shows on TV, and people have seen her and know her face. She's an Olympic gold medalist. She's obviously got horse racing background. I think she was involved in ownership.
Yeah, we should say Sam, of course, is background from Liverpool. She's from Liverpool. She's huge interest in racing. She said in a Racing Post interview this week, available online, that she's a huge racing fan and has been all her life. Has clearly got a knowledge of it. This is no newcomer. This is someone who has become famous and become well-respected and become a gold medal winner, as you mentioned, from her own field, but throughout her career and her life has always had an active interest in horse racing.
Yeah, and I think as well, you know, you need people like that to sort of draw a different type of audience in. And ITV do a great job of that. You know, it's important to bring that extra flavour to the show. And the fact that she is from Liverpool as well, she knows the city like the back of her hand. So it adds that bit more sort of colour to the weekend of action that we're about to see. So in terms of promoting the sport, then ITV are doing it in the way that they should be doing it. But at the same time, they do also have the experts, you know, like we've seen on the show, whether it be sort of Luke Harvey or Mick Fitzgerald or whoever. So from ITV Racing's perspective, then it is exciting to see someone different who's not in the sport all the time to sort of bring that extra flavour into the show.
Yeah, I completely agree. My opinion on the subject is I think as always, people on social media have been quite unfair. But I think that the important element is this is television. It's got to be entertaining. Mm-hmm. And the more variety, the more elements to it you have, is hugely important. You're very right. This is on ITV1. This is the main channel. It's in between Tipping Point and events like and game shows like that. These are people who are flicking on the TV and wanting to watch the Grand National. They might not particularly care about the 10-year trends of the Liverpool hurdle. It's more casual viewers. If you want something more defined, then you'd pay for a subscription racing channel. You need to appeal to the masses on terrestrial TV, and that's how it works. And thirdly, I think ITV really have embraced the idea of bringing different parties along, bringing sort of different voices and different ways of showing it, whether that's in pictures, whether that's in the guests and the experts they have and what sort of levels they're showing, i.e. Ruby Walsh highlighting a key point on the replays, whether it's sort of showing the colour of the race day experience. And after all, this is BAFTA winning coverage. If anyone knows how to do it, they've clearly got the track record and they've been respected to do it.
Yeah, and I think as well, like, there's obviously different elements to the show that they present. You know, they'll have sort of four or five hours across each day, you know, on Thursday, Friday, Saturday. They'll obviously have the opening show as well. And, you know, for a non-racing fan, if they were to turn the TV on to watch the ITV racing and see Ruby Walsh talking about, you know, dissecting a race.
Yeah.
But then, on the other hand, they see Sam Queck talking about her experiences in the sport.
How Liverpool finds it.
Well, exactly. I think it draws in a different type of audience. Yeah. And it might enhance people then to sort of stick around, watch a race, watch two races. And listen, we're not going to see ITV Racing do this to every meeting of the year. They're doing it because, like Lee said in his column, the Grand National is more than just the racing. Yeah. It's everything. It's the build-up. It's everything that happens around it. It's massive for the city of Liverpool. And to have a Liverpoolian on as well, talk about her experiences in the city and how big it is for the area, is massive.
Got to make it fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, there might be some complaints about the presenting panel on the front page this week. So who knows? Maybe we should turn our attentions to that. But we'll leave that for another time. We have to choose what the best story is of the week. It's got to be the Grand National, isn't it? It's the easiest job in the world. It's the Grand National week. The Grand National's coming this week, so it has to be done. Thank you very much to my Lambourne correspondent, Liam Head, in the studio, just the two of us, of course, this afternoon. I've been James Stevens. Do make sure to catch all our Grand National coverage on the Racing Post online and, of course, on YouTube. If you're a fan of the show, do rate, review and subscribe, of course. And join us again next week on the front page. Goodbye.